107.
Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. Today, we'll be test talking with Brian Aachen, author of the book Python Testing with Unit Tests, Nose, and PyTest, and the host of the new podcast, Python Test Podcast. So get ready to discover some cool Python testing techniques, including how to use Python for embedded testing. But first, let's hear it for our awesome sponsor, Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. Hey, Brian. Welcome to Test Talks.
Thanks.
It's great to have you on the show, but before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, I'm a software engineer. I'm mostly a C++ developer. I got a computer science degree in 96, a master's, and jumped into the hardware world. And around 2000, started learning about test-driven development and using Python for our testing. And kind of went from there. I work in the test and measurement industry, making oscilloscopes and things like that.
Oh, cool. So I guess what first strikes me by this is that you are a real programmer, C++, that's hardcore programming, I think. And you're more from, I guess, my generation, where most developers that I speak to, they don't like testing. And anytime they hear testing, they get completely turned off because they automatically think QA testing. So how did you get into testing, or why do you think testing is important?
I've worked in a lot of different groups, and you know, sometimes we've got a QA team, but I've worked on a lot of groups that had no QA team, and I have seen that reluctance to test, but just things go way better if you've got dedicated testing in your team. Actually, it's surprising to me because the lesson we learned from test-driven development is that test is really, really important. And it makes everything go easier if you do figure that out first. And if there's no QA team, there's nobody doing that. So I think developers have to be involved. Actually, one of the difficulties when I started learning about test-driven development, there was this focus on, and there still is a focus on, the unit test model. But that's really difficult in an embedded environment, which I'm working in. So it was easier to morph the model into more of a functional. I thought of a unit as a unit of functionality instead of a unit of code, and that seemed to work fine. Also, I was testing the same API our users have. So the focus of, I think, a better focus for developers is to focus on a user-level API, and that sort of brings in, I've also seen a model where developers are actually, especially in the hardware industry, and with our age level, I guess, there's a lot of teams that they went through layoffs in the around 2000, and then again, I don't know, a handful of years later, and often the QA team was the people that got laid off, and so that's one of the reasons why people are reluctant to put testing on their resume, which is unfortunate now.
Yep.
I don't know if that's still the case, but anyway, it's just easier to develop when you got solid tests in place.
Awesome. So can we just expand on that a little bit more? What kind of security does testing give you with your test when you're developing? So you're developing, how do these tests get in your way, or do they actually help you? Do you have an example of a time when your tests actually help you find an issue before you released it to the public or something like that?
Well, yeah, actually almost every day, especially. So I'm a team lead now, and we have to really, what I really need is a hardcore C++ talent on my team, because that's what we're doing. But I often have to look outside of the electrical engineering world. So nobody on my team has an electrical engineering degree. But so these instruments are really complicated. And to make sure that we really understand how the user interaction, we really aren't, because we're not the target market, you know? So little corner cases, like, you know, we've got features that are in place that are really important to some customers, but on a day-to-day basis, we don't use them. Those things, having a test suite to make sure everything works is, it's the only way to go. Just the other day, I refactored something to make the code look nicer, but it swapped around a couple indices. We've got a whole bunch of different channels within a protocol that the enumerations aren't lined up between the hardware enumerations and the user interface enumerations for what channels are which. And but they all look kind of the same. And without tests in place, I mucked it up. So the tests helped me to make sure I didn't deliver that to customers.
Awesome. I like the example you just gave, how you refactor something just to make it look better. So it's almost like the Boy Scout rule. Well, if you see something and you think it could be better, make the change, and everyone's better for it, I think.
Yeah, and that's the wonderful freedoms that testing gives you, is the ability to refactor without fear.
Yeah, that's a great point. Can you tell us how testing or developing for an embedded system is different than testing for, say, like a web application? Are there anything different that a developer needs to be aware of when they're testing and developing for an embedded system?
Well, I'm not actually that experienced with web development, so I'm not sure what the comparisons are. I mean, I've done a little bit of, you know, designing a website or something, but nothing professionally. But one of the big things is, for instance, we can't put in unit tests in place in an embedded environment. But those are what happens often is those will be put in. They have to be compiled into a different executable. So it's a completely different environment, and they're often run. The unit tests are often run on a PC instead of in the embedded environment. I think it's more important to focus on the environment that the user ends up actually seeing. So I think the functional level tests are easier to work with. There's a lot of difficulties with developing embedded that, you know, I guess you don't have to deal with in other places. But it seems like actually that stuff would be hard in web development too. I mean, you're either working on the live system, which you don't want to test on. And often there's only one live system, which is, I don't have that problem. I can stick test code on my instrument and it's not going to affect customers. But actually web development and web testing seems a little harder to me.
I guess when I think of embedded versus web, just from a testing perspective, functionally, you know, you could do an end-to-end testing. People understand how to open up a browser and do a workflow and automate it. But for an embedded system, I would think that would be not as intuitive. I guess you're just directly interacting with the APIs and kind of anticipating what a typical workflow would be, connecting different APIs together.
Yeah, well, most of our, this is probably, well, at least all the instruments I've worked on, they all have a remote API. And that is, you know, by far the easiest thing to test against. And because of that, it wasn't always the case, but a long time ago, the entire industry, I think, moved towards a model where the graphical interface is and the hard keys on the front of the instruments and things like that, they interact with something like a database or something, and the remote API interacts with the same database. So the entire system, when you test it, if you test it through the remote API, you're going to hit, you know, 95% of the functionality that the graphic interface hits also. And I've looked at some people within the web world have a model that the graphic interface and the web interface needs to be built on top of an API. And that seems cool. That's basically what we do. One of the interesting things is about test instruments is you don't really know how the customer's going to use it. And you can't get live feedback or anything because of security concerns. I mean, a test instrument customer isn't going to want you to stick some cookies on their machine that sends back information on how they're using their instrument. So
I could see how that could be a challenge. So I guess you just need to just test the best you know and get based on feedback from your customers, maybe over time you get some sort of knowledge of knowing what type of scenarios you might want to definitely touch or test.
Yeah, and we have our teams are filled with a handful of really seasoned and experienced electrical engineers that really work with the customers. We have application engineers that work closely with the developer on the customer side, and those guys sit close by, and we can talk with them to figure out how the users are using things.
So I just want to switch gears really quick. So the main point or the main topic I really wanted to talk to you about was Python. And the reason why is I came across your Python test podcast, and it's all about testing with Python. So how did you move from C++, or how did Python come into the picture in your career?
Well, I was talking about the remote API for the instruments, and it's a text-based interface that's really well defined, and there's an industry standard called SCPI, I think, Skippy, that we build our interfaces for instruments, and almost every hardware company that does the same. But these, you can use any programming language to control. And I don't know, it was the early 2000s. I was on a team where they decided to use Python for writing tests against the instrument. And there was this custom framework that they had. So I just learned just enough Python to be able to write these little scripts within and tests within the framework. But I don't know, maybe 6 years ago, I found myself without a test framework pre-written for me. And oddly enough, instead of going out and looking to see what else was there, I just wrote my own and wrote a test executive and wrote it in Python. Yeah, I love Python a lot more than C++ now. you can get so much done way faster. And in our situation, I think it helps. The hard part is I need to convince C++ developers that they need to learn Python. But it's taking less convincing nowadays. But one of the great things is that you have to think about the problem from the user's perspective in a different language than the language you're implementing. So, I mean, that is a mind shift to think like a customer versus think like a software engineer. And the switch of using two different languages, I think, actually helps people to have that switch.
Wow. So that's a different perspective that I haven't heard before. So that's a great point. I think most people think that doing that context switching, you would be less productive. But it sounds like you're saying that switching to a different language gives you actually a better perspective maybe that you may not have thought of if you were just using the same exact language as the software that you're developing.
Yeah, and also there's so many cool things. We're dealing with huge arrays of numbers that come out of these instruments, and being able to flip them around and manipulate them really quickly with the Python tools, it's something that's a lot more painful in something as low level as C++.
So what you mentioned earlier, I would think would be an issue also, trying to convince, say, a C++ developer to even consider using a scripting language like Python. So do you consider Python a real programming language that enables you to do real development tasks? I mean, when would you use C++ over Python, or what are your thoughts around that?
Well, it definitely makes sense for, I don't know, the C++ is just a requirement for hardware level interactions at the speeds that we're trying to do. I mean, we're trying to squeeze as much performance as we can out of our instruments, and it wouldn't make sense to put, well, I don't know, it might make sense to put an embedded language in there, but or a Python or something running the instrument, but it's just generally not done still. C++ is by far the most widely used language when you're talking directly with hardware. And I mean, there's probably a ton of C++ code in every car, probably with all the chips that are running in there. But anything outside of talking directly to hardware at a fast speed, I think Python makes sense. But I have been paying attention to a lot of the, like, MicroPython has come out, and it's supposedly super fast. So we may be changing soon. Not our company, but I think the industry as a whole may be having to reconsider that notion that C++ is a requirement for every fast interaction.
I wonder what's making that push. Is it more like the Internet of Things? You think as more and more things get embedded into chips, that actually embedded technology or embedded developing and software testing is probably going to grow over time?
Yeah, definitely. I think the Internet of Things, the Raspberry Pi, and the other small boards to let people tinker with stuff, is actually exploded the use of Python for hardware, and that's pretty cool.
Awesome. So, what's your view on test-driven development? I know you have a blog post on this. I just wanted to know what your views were. Is TDD dead, or do you use TDD all the time?
Yeah, actually, so around the time where I was really trying to come to grips with, when I started writing this blog, I wanted to write more about processes like test-driven development. So I went out and did a bunch of research, and a lot of people writing about TDD were writing about something that I wasn't familiar with, this isolation model, isolated unit tests using mocks and stuff. And that's just really foreign to me. I think of tests from the customer's perspective first, and I definitely think that tests around important subsystems, we've got some really hardcore, some real algorithmic stuff. If it's really some core algorithm, of course you're going to put some tests right around that. But at a functional level, it doesn't make sense to me. And I thought I had just learned TDD wrong the first time. But then with that TDD is dead thing that came out, they got all these people that were near the beginning of test-driven development, and they were thinking the same thing. You don't go crazy with these isolated unit tests. And hearing some people say they've never used mock and probably never will, I think that's great. It enforced the fact that I'm not crazy with thinking of the entire scale from functional tests down to unit tests as a as-needed basis. You don't have to go crazy and test everything.
Brian, are there any cool or must-know Python libraries that you use all the time that you think everyone should know about?
Well, in NumPy, it opened up quite a lot of our world for us. We're actually kind of slow to pick up new things because the core language itself gives us quite a bit. That's probably a no-brainer for most Python developers, but it's good to pick up some of these scientific computing things, especially within the electrical engineering testing.
Very cool. Brian, I know you also wrote a book on Python testing with unit tests, nodes, and PyTest. Can you just tell us a little bit more what that book covers or where people can get a hold of that?
Yeah, well, so at pythontesting.net/book, I've got it there. But I wrote it, the impetus of the entire website was that I had written this test executive from scratch and then went out and looked and found unit test and nodes and PyTest. And I wanted to compare all three and really figure out how each of them worked and if I should switch to one of them. And I couldn't find any reasonable tutorials that were fair to each other. There were some nose tutorials that slammed unit test, but some of the stuff didn't apply anymore. So I really wanted to create a resource that could treat both of them, all three of them, fairly, and kind of go through a similar model. So I came up with this kind of a silly subset of Markdown, just a few pieces of Markdown, and wrote a little script writing a script to convert Markdown to HTML, and then wrote some tests around it and tried to do functional level testing in all three of those. I also started with DocTest too, but I kind of got frustrated with DocTest really, really fast. So that's really the core of that book, is just all of those introduction. I wanted an introduction to all three of them that had the same flavor so that they were pretty easy to compare the three. And then extended them into using fixtures a lot, because fixtures are really important in my work. But I think fixtures are something that's underused in a lot of Python tests.
Awesome. I think the book's a great resource. Also, I think in your second episode, you covered this in your Python test podcast, PyTest versus unit test versus nodes that people should check out. Is there one thing you see over and over again in your experience that you think most people using Python are doing wrong?
Well, in my world, what I see a lot of time is people using it as C++. Using multiple languages is, and a lot of them are based on the C syntax. It's easy to just use a new language and do everything you did before, but in the different language. And I think it's really important when you're picking up a new language to actually pay attention to the differences, like the the for loop is completely different. So why is it different? And try to embrace the differences instead of working around them. A couple of years ago, embracing the idiomatic Python or Pythonic way, or there's tons of posts and a couple books, I think, on that. And getting a little bit into that to make sure that you're doing things as concisely as you need to be. The other thing that I see a lot is people not looking for this. There's tons of standard libraries and things on PyPy that people don't know about, especially with a bunch of engineers. And this may be true everywhere for Python developers. It's often a lot easier just to write your own than to look to see what the best in the industry is already.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I see that all the time with Java developers. I think that's a common theme across all languages with developers. So Brian, are there any resources or books that you would recommend to help someone in their Python testing or Python developing efforts to get them up to speed?
Well, actually, I keep getting asked that question within my company, and that's one of the reasons why I'm writing about it, because I don't have any good resources. The Harry Percival's book, I think it seems pretty decent if you're a web developer, but since it talks about Django testing, I'm probably not a good person to critique that since I'm not a Django developer. One of the things that it's not really Python, it's probably all developers, is this notion of the management wants me to do something or management doesn't understand. But there's a little book out there called Team Geek. It's a really quick read, and I recommend everybody read it because it helps managers think like developers and it helps developers think like managers. I think everything runs more smoothly if the engineers think a little bit more like a bean counter.
Cool. It sounds like an awesome resource. I love books, so I'm definitely going to add that to my reading list. So Brian, here's a random question. It just popped in my head. Is there a philosophy or a point of view you have towards Python or Python testing? I tend to find that people that use Python have a certain way of looking at things. So
I'm from Oregon, and we kind of, I don't know if it's just us, but we think about things a little differently. There was a t-shirt that I saw in college that said conventional wisdom is seldom both. And I actually think like that a lot now. And so when you get to the point where somebody says, oh yeah, we always do that because it's just the right way. I think it's important for everybody to at least shine some light on it and make sure they understand why it's the right thing to do before they just go off and follow what conventional wisdom is.
Okay, Brian, before we go, is there one piece of actual advice you can give someone to improve their Python testing efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
If you're not already using setup and teardown fixtures, and go ahead and use those. And don't be afraid of classes within testing. The last thing I think is it takes a while to get your head around PyTest fixtures, but it's well worth the effort because they're extremely powerful. And to get a hold of me, you can find me at pythontesting.net. I'm also at Brian Ocken on Twitter.
Thank you, Brian, for your Python testing automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to www.testtalks.com/71. And while you're there, make sure to click on the more info link under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And if you could do me a favor, if this episode has helped you in any way, or you think it can help someone you know, why not share it with a coworker or friend? And together, we can help spread automation awesomeness to the masses. And speaking of spreading automation awesomeness, I just want to give a quick shout out to 3 new Test Talks reviews in iTunes. So thank you, DJ Percent, Jay-Z Ikra, and Looper Lonic for your reviews and 5-star ratings. They really helped the show get more exposure, so I really appreciate you helping me spread automation awesomeness. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with test automation. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.